Wired Jesus Podcast, January 21st, 2007. Creative Commons licensed.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters.
Wired Jesus Podcast.
I walk a lonely road, the only one that I have ever known. Don't know where it goes, but it's only me and I walk alone.
Wired wanderings of a postmodern pilgrim.
I walk this empty street on the boulevard of broken dreams.
And you will know my name is the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon thee.
Well, I don't like your God. Your God scares me.
My boy, we're pilgrims in an unholy land.
Hello, and welcome to the Wired Jesus Podcast, the Wired Wanderings of a Postmodern Pilgrim. I'm your host and fellow traveler, Tom Lieberg, and glad to have you along for the journey. If you hear a little bit of something that sounds like wind in the background, that's because I find myself sitting out on a porch in the bright Florida sunshine. I'm down here in Orlando, Florida for the 2007 Creative Ministry Gathering. You may have noticed the link on the webpage regarding this event. I've been one of the lead coordinators for several years and been a participant for even longer. So I'm down here to help coordinate the event and have some fun in the sun while I'm at it. It's kind of nice to come down here in January and get away from the snow up north, and apparently a lot of other pastors agree. So looking forward to a good time. I always take a few vacation days and swing down to Naples, which is on the Gulf Coast, about as far south as you can go, right on the edge of the Everglades. That's where I grew up and where my parents live and my brother and his family. So it's always fun to listen to them. But I thought I would go ahead and do this podcast intro for this best of out here in the sun with a little bit of a breeze. As I mentioned before, this is a best of. Part one was last week, and it's the podcast that I did reflecting on Dave Slusher's Why I Don't Believe in God. Again, to recap, and if you're just jumping in, be sure to go back and listen to the last podcast, which is part one. But the reason for doing this is things were a little hectic at church, and with this event coming up, I thought a best of might be fun. And a new listener had gone back through the archives, had found this podcast, and was really moved by it. And kind of parallel to that, the latest issue, well, it would have been the November issue of Wired Magazine, the cover story was on the new atheism, which in some regards reflects some of where Dave is at, but also in other aspects, a place quite different from where Dave is. So it makes for an interesting place to listen to hear Dave's voice as a postmodern, as well as some boomer scientists who have reflected on the reality of God, or unreality, if you will, and where their journey has taken them. So I'll probably do a follow-up after this reflecting on some of those things. In the coming month or so, I'm hoping to take advantage of a new plugin for Skype called Pamela that allows you to record conversations online. I have a few folks that I had lined up who were interested in doing interviews, so I hope to make that happen. But if there are individuals that you would like to hear who reflecting on the postmodern journey of faith, let me know, and I'll see what contacts I can make and see if I can arrange those. But in the meantime, I'm going to enjoy the sunshine, and I hope you enjoy this rebroadcast. And I thank you for coming along on the journey. And see you out there on the road. Wired Jesus Podcast, July 26, 2005.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters.
Wired Jesus Podcast.
I walk a lonely road, the only one that I have ever known. Don't know where it goes, but it's only me and I walk alone.
Wired Wanderings of a Postmodern Pilgrim.
I walk this empty street on the boulevard of broken dreams.
And you will know my name is the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon thee.
Well, I don't like your God. Your God scares me.
My boy, we're pilgrims in an unholy land.
Hello, and welcome to the Wired Jesus Podcast, the Wired Wanderings of a Postmodern Pilgrim. I'm your host and fellow traveler, Tom Lieberg, and glad you've come along for our journey together. Today is part two of looking at Dave Slusher's audio essay, Why I Don't Believe in God. Like I've mentioned before, he recorded it back on January 31st as an episode of the Evil Genius Chronicles. Again, the link is there on Wired Jesus and on the webpage. This is part two. We looked at part one last week, and so this is the remaining 20 minutes or so of Dave's podcast. I'm just going to go ahead and jump right into it, but first a quick thank you to all you who have posted comments and sent me emails. You really seem to be enjoying the insights and challenges that Dave offers and my commentary on that. So without any further ado, here we go back to Dave Slusher's Why I Don't Believe in God.
So I alluded earlier to bad Christians, people who do all the stuff. They fulfill all the Christian trappings, and in their hearts, I don't know what's in their hearts. All I know is how they treat me and how they deal with me. And I have been cheated by somebody who has, you know, a Jesus fish on their business card, and talks about Jesus all the time, and you know, just on and on and on about how devout and how religious they are. And when it comes to crunch time, they decide, you know, that money's more important to me. It would be more important for me to swindle this person out of little money than, you know, to behave according to some form of moral Christ-like, you know, way of comporting myself. I know a lot of people, and I see a lot of people say at the upper levels of our government, who are in this chunk of people who are conservative, you know, socially conservative, right-wing, highly religious, or at least say they're highly religious people, who are also pretty wealthy. And as I read it back when I was reading the New Testament closely, I understood what Jesus was saying to kind of boil down to people are more important than money. And it's more important to be good to each other than it is to accumulate a lot of wealth. I mean, that's, call me crazy, that's how I read a lot of that stuff. That's how I interpreted that. And you know, when I see people who talk about how Christian they are, and then when it comes down to what they do, you know, it's time for them to do stuff, they're all about acquiring more money. They're about withdrawing money from helping people, and they're all about putting it more in the pockets of the rich. To me, you can't get more opposite of what Jesus is saying. That's not one of the WWJD. Jesus would not do that. When I see people who have those, you know, any WWJD thing, or in case of rapture, this car will be empty. You know,
I'm going to stop it there for just a minute. I want to talk a little bit about Dave's comments about Christians and money, the repeated pattern that I've seen over and over again, and everyone has, that of Christians who choose money over Jesus. That when it comes to Christian ethics, he's exactly right. We say people are more important than money, and yet we see Christians over and over again, like human people, buying into the whole culture of materialism and defined as the American dream. The biggest fights in churches I have ever seen, both churches I've been members of and pastoring, it's been over money. And quite often it's not only how we spend money, but it's particularly when the church receives gifts. When the church has disposable money that's given to endowments or things like that. or when there's a request for someone who needs financial assistance because of medical bills or something like that, that very quickly we get caught up into determining, you know, are they really worthy enough? Are they going to cheat us? Is giving this money going to be bad for them? And the whole thing becomes about them, making sure that they're worthy, they're going to be responsible. And if we aren't quite sure, we need to make sure they're responsible and come up with all kinds of levels of accountability or excuses not to give in the end. So he's right. Money-making, a money-making show of belief does not mirror the humble relationship between ourselves and God that Jesus modeled.
The Bible that I read, maybe I had a crazy translation that stuck this stuff in. Maybe I had a rogue, unauthorized translation. But I recall Jesus saying not to make a show of your faith, not to pray on the street corner so everyone could see how holy you are, but to go in the closet and pray. That it's not that is not something that you do in order to be rewarded by other people. It's for you and your reward in heaven. And so every time I see somebody with a WWJD pin or sticker or hat or whatever, or you know, one of those bumper stickers, or to me that In Case of Rapture one is the most it's just so presumptuous. Hey everybody, I'm so holy that God will take me when he leaves you. And the whole apocalypse fetishists, your whole Left Behind fans and all that crap. I don't believe that there is a God. I don't believe that there's a life after this life. I believe what we have here is all there is. That's why I try to live to the best of my abilities while we're on this world. I try to treat people the way I want to be treated. I believe that's a Jesus thing. And I don't believe that anything I do will be rewarded in heaven, because I don't believe there will be a heaven. I find it awfully disturbing to find people living their lives and walking around here who are sort of rooting for the fact that, you know, in a couple of years, they don't want any of us to be here. They're hoping. Hey, I hope Jesus comes back soon. Oh, yeah. I especially don't like it.
Amen, hallelujah, preach it, brother. Oh, man. That is, be honest up front about the whole thing, the whole Left Behind rapture business just drives me nuts. And for exactly the reason he's saying, you know, I've got the rapture, you know, bumper sticker, in case of rapture, this car will be empty. Or the encouragement of, there's a Left Behind movies, and then there were a couple other TV evangelists who came out with these rapture videos before Y2K. You know, to give these to your relatives so when God snatches you to heaven and they're going to be, you know, tortured by the Antichrist, you know, they'll find a way out. And, you know, and because you're such a good person, you need to do this now because you know you're saved and better than everyone else. Oh, just, I tell you, it commercialized Christianity leads to arrogance. I just, you know, have seen that repeated over and over again. The rapture stuff is a perfect example. Are the Left Behind books, you know, bad? They're fun reading. I really put them kind of in the same category as Harry Potter, except I think Harry Potter is better written. You know, they're a fun read, but, you know, from my perspective, as I understand the Bible, it's an American invention of the 19th century that we've just kind of plastered over Jesus, and, you know, it's not there in the Bible. The word isn't there. But, and we may disagree on that for those of you who are Christians who are listening, but whether you believe and accept the teaching of the rapture or not, you know, I think Dave has the point that we will cling to certain beliefs and parade them around thinking we're being sincere, thinking we're being Bible-believing or whatever, and instead we're just being arrogant about the whole thing and driving people away.
I don't believe that there is a God. I don't believe that there's a life after this life. I believe what we have here is all there is. That's why I try to live to the best of my abilities while we're on this world. I try to treat people the way I want to be treated. I believe that's a Jesus thing. And I don't believe that anything I do will be rewarded in heaven, because I don't believe there will be a heaven. I find it awfully disturbing to find people living their lives and walking around here who are sort of rooting for the fact that, you know, in a couple of years, they don't want any of us to be here. They're hoping. Hey, I hope Jesus comes back soon. Oh, yeah. I especially don't like it as, say, some in our government believe that, and high levels of our government believe that. And in some cases, these are people in charge of long-term planning for our country. I don't want anyone in charge of long-term anything who believes that Jesus is coming back soon. That just doesn't work for me. I don't want that. I want somebody who believes the world will be around in 50 years. I don't want people making short-term decisions because they're pretty sure the trumpet's going to blow next year. That's not right. I also heard recently on, it was on The Daily Show, and I can't remember this man's name, but I'd like to give him a prize and or have him bronzed. And he's some guy, he's a theologist, he's a Christian thinker, but he was actually kind of, he was talking about the importance of a secular government being separate from a religious, you know, from the religious apparatus. And he was also, he made this statement, and I wish I could think of the guy's name, but it was just so wonderful. Is he said that Christians need to understand that they do not have a monopoly on morality. And I just thought that was a wonderful thing to hear a Christian say, because I know a lot of Christians, in fact, do believe that and do act that way, as if Christianity is the only path to doing the right thing. Which, you know, I find somewhere between disturbing and insulting, because I always try to do the right thing. Again, as I say, I don't think there's anything other than this. And I'm not trying to score Jesus points to buy a ticket to heaven. If I do something that I think is right, I'm doing it because I think it's the right thing. I don't think I'll be rewarded for it. I don't think I'll be punished if I do the wrong thing. All I know is that my life here on earth is more pleasant if I treat people right, and you know, I'm maybe trying to buy some goodwill so that they'll treat me right. But you know, that's not what makes me act morally. I act morally because I want to act morally. And again, I, you know, forgive me if I feel a little smug about this, but I tend to think that doing the right thing for no other reason than because it's the right thing perhaps is a little more self-actualizing than doing the right thing because you think that's what you got to do to get into heaven, and you don't want God to smite you for doing the wrong thing.
I came across a story, not too long ago, about one of the first Christian missionaries in China, and how he was actually thrown out of the Church of England because his approach to being a missionary was to actually engage Chinese culture. He did the unthinkable for a Westerner, is that he dressed in Chinese clothes. He lived among Chinese people. He spoke the Chinese language. He ate Chinese food. And he spoke to them about Chinese religion and actually drew comparisons between Chinese religion and Christianity and complimented Confucianism and Buddhism and drew parallels with Christianity. He was one of the most successful missionaries to go over there and was thrown out of the organized church because of his heretical statements that included that Christianity does not have a corner on morality and that, gee, God might even be present in other religions outside of the narrow definitions that we as Christians might cling to. It's a humbling thing to realize, and again, engaging postmoderns, I think this is important, you know, particularly for pastors like myself to understand that morality, ethical behavior, is recognized as an end within itself and not necessarily grounded in a faith tradition. Now, we might argue a bit there as to, you know, there are some values that would be, in an existentialist sense, you know, ultimate values, but again, not necessarily tied to any established religious tradition, but a point of dialogue for us to engage in.
You know, I'm not trying to bribe anyone by my actions. I don't believe that. So, you know, anything I do towards being a good person is completely optional, but I want to do it anyway, because that's just the only way that seems reasonable to live your life to me. So,
the remainder of Dave's podcast, I'm going to just play uninterrupted. It's a powerful story, personal story that he tells here on out, and I think it's best heard uninterrupted, without any commentary on my part. I'll have some reflections on the end, but I want you just to have a chance to listen to this in Dave's own words, the entire story.
I'm going to talk a little here about my father. We are very close to the period where we just passed somewhere the second anniversary of my father's death. And I've known the day, but I actually have sort of gone out of my way to not remember the day. Because I don't want to wake up someday and think, or look at the calendar and think, oh, today's the anniversary. Yeah, Dad died X years ago. Oh, yeah, today's the anniversary of his death. Woohoo. Here's how my dad died. He was 59 years old. He had been a heavy smoker, 2-3 packs a day, since he was probably 14, 15, 16, something like that. That fall of 2002, he was walking through our house, and he had a coughing fit so bad that he blacked out, fell down, and when he fell down, he broke his ribs. And I don't remember why he wasn't healing. I don't remember if, you know, I think part of it had to do with the fact that as a 40-plus year smoker, he's always coughing, and the ribs were not setting, and he was not getting any better. He's kind of been in constant pain. And, you know, I saw him at Christmas time. I talked to him on the phone. My mother's birthday is in the middle of January, and more often than not, and this year too, it's right after the holidays, and so you miss it. You're still unwinding from the holidays, and her birthday is come and gone. Well, I had called to talk to her, to, you know, tell her that for the 10th year in a row I forgot to send her a card. And she wasn't home, and I'm talking to my dad. And we had a nice long conversation. You know, my dad and I did not necessarily have the best relationship. We didn't have a bad one, but, you know, it was tense at times, you know. I love him, and I knew he loved me. But there were, you know, there was a lot of headbutting. Some of it, you know, firstborn sons and dads, you know, have that thing where sometimes you're competitors, sometimes you're antagonists, and sometimes you're co-conspirators, and so you have a complicated relationship. And as it happened, so I talked to him, and you know, told him I loved him, and luckily we did not have a fight, because, you know, a week later he was dead. Somewhere in here, he was taking medicine for pain, and he was depressed, and somewhere, one of those days in there, he picked up his shotgun, and he walked outside to the deck outside their house, and he put the shotgun to his chest, and he killed himself. And so that was late January 2003. The day I found out about the space shuttle explosion, like as the news was coming in, is as I was on the way to his funeral, which certainly put that one in perspective. I felt a little different. How about the Columbia? I don't even remember the name of the space shuttle. Was it the Columbia? This is how blindsided I was. It was like everything was hidden behind this halo of his death. It's like an eclipse, and the only thing that I could know, you know, knew was just his death, which overwhelmed everything. And just kind of the pain and anger of this whole thing. As we are in the funeral, and funerals are the most horrible social obligation there is, because anyone at a funeral, the people who least need this on their shoulders are the one on whom all the social obligations fall. So I'm upset, I'm angry, and you're at the funeral and you have to, you know, smile, to shake people's hands, and I know nobody meant any harm, and they're just doing what you got to do. I've been on both ends of this, and nobody means any harm, but I found myself wanting to just punch people. I just wanted people to leave me alone. I didn't want to be there. I'm so angry at the way my dad died. And I guess I forgot to mention this before, but because of the timing and because of the evidence we found of him kind of preparing to kill himself, that I know that when I talked to him, this was already in the works. He had been getting this ready for a while. Didn't say a word to me. Didn't ask for help. There's nothing in this world I wouldn't have done for him. If he needed illegal drugs for pain, by God, I'd have found him. I'd have gone and bought him heroin. I'd have cooked it for him. I'd have done whatever. I don't know how we do this, but I would have learned for him. If that's what he needed to stay alive, I would have done it. Didn't even tell me it was a problem. He actually told me he felt good. We're at the funeral, and over, people tell me that God has a plan, and that God doesn't test us more than we can bear. And all I'm like blindsided. I mean, I'm just dumbfounded that people are saying this to me. Like, because I'm talking openly about his suicide. It was not hidden. No, we all made the decision that we're not going to lie about this. We're not going to cover up for this. It is what it is. Everyone in our neighborhood knew anyway, because there are cops and coroners, and it's a thing. When you shoot yourself outside your house, it's a thing. And so people say, God doesn't test us more than he can bear. And all I can think is, I can think of a counterexample to that. Didn't God test my dad more than he can bear? Why do you suppose people shoot themselves? Because when they're in pain and they just decide not to that they can't take it anymore, and they shoot themselves. Is that not being tested beyond what you can bear? Telling me that this is God's plan does not comfort me in the slightest. Telling me that God decided my dad should die. God wants my dad dead, and now he's dead. Excellent. Great. Thank you for informing me that this is all part of God's plan, because that makes it so much easier to bear. The fact that God is the murderer, that God wanted this to happen this way. God wanted my father to shoot himself in the chest. There is no comfort in that. All that leaves is anger for me. So I had long since firmed my opinions before this point. But it was just such a resounding example of how thoughtless people can be on this, of how blind they can be, and of how unquestioning, and how just reflexively, idiotically, blind this faith can be. This is blind faith. When you're not even able to see that what you're saying at this moment doesn't make any sense. It just makes me feel like I'm crazy sometimes. That I feel like something's wrong with them, or something's wrong with me, because we're not looking at this right. This can't we can't be talking about the same thing, because it just doesn't work. So there you have it. That's the story of my dad, which again didn't make me feel this way, but it's in one incident, in one anecdote, it just sums everything back up, and I don't believe there is a God. I don't believe any of these kind of common, folksy, American Christian things. I'm sure they're nice to believe. I'm sure they're warm. Gives you warm fuzzies to think that there's a magic man in the sky who has your interests at heart and who cares about you and wants things to go good for you. But I can't make myself believe that. I think my life would probably be easier if I could make myself believe that, but I can't. So, again, I'm not trying to talk anyone out of this. If you believe in Jesus, if you can sleep at night because you believe in God, more power to you, brother. More power to you, sister. I can't believe in God. I don't believe in God. I won't believe in God. It's just me and you and the void. And I don't think anything matters, and I don't think anything will last beyond the love that I have for you and that you have for me. I think the only metric that we can be measured on is by how well we treat each other. The number of people who are sad when you're gone, the sadness that people have, the love that they have for you, that's all there is. So, this has been the downer episode of the Evil Genius Chronicles. If you have any feedback, you can try to convert me, but it's not going to work very well. Please send it to dslusher@gmail.com. This is normally where I say there'll be show notes, but there won't be any show notes for this. I want to thank you for listening, if you have made it this far. This is not the fun time listening I normally have. And I appreciate your time, and thanks for listening. Bye.
One of the obligations that I have as a pastor is to participate and lead a Christian community in funerals. Well, I think funerals are helpful and healthy things for those who are grieving the death of someone they love. It seems often well-meaning but stupid comments by Christians often turn the visitation in particular, but the funeral as well, into an emotional running gauntlet. The beating that you take as a grieving person, and the pieces that have to be picked up afterwards emotionally can be just nauseating. I mean, I've stood there and I've heard far too many, and Dave's story is nothing new. Bill Cosby does a great routine of what he wants done when he dies, and has a tape player playing underneath his casket to say, "Gee, don't I look like myself?" You know, if you've been to a visitation and stood in line, you've heard all these. You know, "Gee, doesn't he look good? Well, she's not in pain anymore." You know, the one Dave got hit with, you know, God doesn't test you more than you can bear. I mean, it's hideous. I'm sorry. They look dead. There's no other way to put it. And, you know, guess what? I'm in pain now, and you aren't helping change that. You know, I might appreciate you trying, but, you know, comments like that, yeah, you know, you want to punch their lights out. The worst that I ever had to deal with was, in one visitation, the comment that was made, you know, "God needed another angel in heaven," and which was then soon followed by, "You know, only the good die young." you know, someone had just been collecting way too many Precious Moments figurines and listening to way too much Billy Joel, who actually I happen to like. I mean, I love the Nylon Curtain album, but you know, this was just wrong, because someone said this to a child whose sister had died. And guess what? The kid was a terror for weeks, making all kinds of not just mischief, but serious stuff for a six-year-old. Cursing, stealing, beating the dog, writing on the wall, acting up in school. And finally, a counselor got to the root of the matter. Guess what stuck in her head? You know, Jesus loves me, this I know. Only the good die young, which means Jesus kills kids so they can be angels with him in heaven. So be bad if you don't want to die. It was awful. You know, death is one of those ultimate moments in life that if we believe in God, we want a clear answer. And we fumble for something that makes sense, something that assures us that above all else, that God is still in control and that God somehow cares. The bestseller, I want to say it was back in the late 70s, early 80s, when bad things happen to good people, wrestled with that whole question of evil. And the Jewish rabbi who wrote it came to the conclusion that in order to have a good and loving God, God must not be in complete control. Otherwise, if God is in complete control, God is not good, God is a sadist. That was his conclusion. Not satisfactory for me. There's the other insulting answer, that God is in control, but he's still a sadist and a murderer, but he's just a loving sadist. Then there's Dave's conclusion that there is no God, that none of it makes sense, no matter how hard you try, and that in of itself is evidence that there's no God. And then there are those who want a different answer for many of these. Having had one of my best friends commit suicide in high school, he hung himself from a ceiling fan 6 weeks after graduation there at his house. His sister, who also happened to be my sister's best friend, there goes the dog, she found him hanging there at home. It appears he did it to avoid being killed by the drug dealers he had gotten involved with. And he was just in over his head. He was probably dealing himself at that point. And down in Naples, Florida, where you've got drugs coming in through the Everglades and via Miami, if you get into trouble like that, your body gets found in the Everglades without its head, hands, and feet, if it's ever found at all. So it seems Bob killed himself to avoid that. And people went to the funeral and said stupid things about God and about Bob and said them to his family. The next stupid thing that probably then happened. Let's see here. Hang on just a minute. My son just walked in. Okay. Where was I? My son just walked in. He's finishing up his Eagle Scout project. Oh, Dave. Stupid things people say at funerals. You know, I have an idea of what Dave went through with some of the stupid things that were said. I think the next stupid thing that probably happened to Dave was after he did this podcast. My hunch is he said this was the most commented on podcast he had done to that point and may yet be. But I can see, knowing friends and not friends, who in this type of situation just want to jump in and be good Christians and counsel them back to to true faith, and I've heard that before with people dealing with you know, the death of a loved one or just, you know, difficulties in life, and, you know, these folks jump in and say, you know, if, you know, Dave, if you could deal with your dad's death by remembering you've got a loving Father in heaven who will never leave you, you know, and remember that and sort out your anger issues, you know, gee, you can be saved again. I've had to pick up those pieces after funerals as well. And yeah, it's just as stupid as the other stuff. And like Dave said, that, you know, his dad's suicide just reinforced his earlier decision. It didn't make it for him. But there too, those type of comments, it just are stupid and insulting, because they end up making Dave's dad into a bad dad. You know, Dave's dad abandoned him by killing himself, and, you know, and then you draw the conclusion, well, you know, God's in control. God killed Dave's dad so that God could look like a better dad. You know, to teach Dave a lesson in suffering, to build his faith and love God more. And, you know, hooray God, this makes sense. It's the stupid stuff we say to make ourselves feel better quickly, to assure ourselves that faith makes sense and is always simple, so we don't have to face how complicated life and the spiritual journey really is. Like I said, I've been wanting to do this podcast for a long time. In fact, before, you know, it's just a putting together the idea originally, because I think these are questions that Christians need to wrestle with, and we need to do it openly in Christian communities that are open to not and being honest about not knowing all the answers, or trying to convince others that our answers are the only right ones, no matter how insulting they might be. That, you know, maybe sometimes offering the question and not knowing an answer, that's where the spiritual journey starts. You know, walking together in real life, telling real stories of meaning, and finding a greater purpose to life other than biology. I have a challenge for, all you listeners out there. I've really, really enjoyed getting your emails. I've liked the comments that have been posted. I like how you're sharing and telling other folks about the podcast. Ever since iTunes started posting podcasts, my numbers continue to go up, and so I appreciate you talking it up. But for this, for those of you who agree with Dave and his conclusions, post a story or statement, or you can send me an email, and, you know, I won't use any names or anything, so you won't get any email back. But a story or statement on how you find meaning in life as a postmodern person outside of a religious tradition or belief. Where do you find your meaning at? Where is your purpose in life, and what do you hold on to when things fall apart? And for those of you who are Christians, how do you find meaning in a spiritual reality or hope when you're faced with the criticisms or with real life situations similar to Dave's? How do you find meaning and hope, well, without sounding stupid? without sounding, you know, insulting to others or insulting to yourself. Wrestle with that and send me your emails and posts. On the next podcast, I'm going to feature one postmodern pastor's approach to dealing with the postmodern questions and realities that trouble Dave and, trouble, you know, all postmoderns who are searching for spiritual answers. called The Ooze. It is a web page and community of Spencer Burke, one-time pastor of a very large evangelical church, who walked away from it all for a new spiritual journey and community that he found to be more authentic and more in tune with real life as he encountered it. So that'll be next podcast, The Ooze and Spencer Burke. That's it for this podcast. Links to the Evil Genius Chronicles and The Ooze are on the show notes on the webpage. I've also done a little bit of tweaking with a new background on the webpage. Hope you like it. If you enjoy any of these websites, Evil Genius, or if you want to check out ahead of time The Ooze, I'd appreciate that you would let those folks know and mention how you found out about them on the Wired Jesus. And be sure to stop by Wired Jesus, leave the comments I asked for or others, or email them to me at tom@wiredjesus.com. And keep passing on the word to others about the podcast more and more each week, and that's an exciting thing to see. So thanks for walking with Wired Jesus, and see you out there on the road.
What if God was one of us? Just a slob like one of us. Blue, 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 blue. Blah, blah, blee, blee, blee. Well done. Very good.
Dr. Evil, that was fantastic.
Thank you, number two.
I wrote that.
Yeah.